Numbers chapter 12. We're going to look at big starters and talkers. Two sources of discouragement for the Christian. Two sources of discouragement for the Christian are big starters and big talkers. And we're going to look in the book of Numbers for some examples that you do not want to emulate. Numbers chapter 12, it says in verse 1, "And Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman." Many believe this is the same one that he married when he first got married. This is his only wife. "And they said, 'Hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us?' And the Lord heard it." Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses and unto Aaron and unto Miriam, "Come out, ye three, unto the tabernacle of the congregation." And they three came out. And the Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both came forth. And he said, "Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him I will speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore then were ye not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle, and behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aaron said unto Moses, "Alas, my Lord, I beseech thee, lay not the sin upon us, wherein we have done foolishly, and wherein we have sinned. Let her not be as one dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed when he cometh out of his mother's womb." And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, "Heal her now, O God, I beseech thee." And the Lord said unto Moses, "If her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that let her be received in again." And Miriam was shut out from the camp 7 days, and the people journeyed not until Miriam was brought in again. And afterward the people removed from Hazeroth and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. You will see here the seriousness of speaking against the one that the Lord had anointed. But the point I want to make out of this passage is, before this passage, what did you think of Aaron and what did you think of Miriam? What did you know of Aaron and Miriam before this? I would say, wow, great people. Miriam, a great woman, one who is mentioned in Exodus 15 there with the song of Moses. Aaron, of course, the high priest. Wow, some great people. And the point I'm trying to make there is that they started out well, didn't they? This is what I call a big start but a small finish. You know, when you run in track, if you're competing on that 440 or 880 or the 100 meter or whatever, you can explode off that line and everybody can be commentating about, wow, look at him go. But let me ask you something. Is it the start that counts or is it the finish that counts? We know it's the finish. I remember in football practice, our coach would have us run sprints, 10 yards, then 20, and then 50, and then 100 yard sprints. And I remember having been in practice and being on the sixth string of a two-string team. I remember when I would start sprinting, I was at rest because I had rested while I watched the other guys practice. This has happened sometimes. So when these sprints started, guess who was in the front? But when the sprints were done, guess who was behind? It doesn't matter how you start when you compare it with how you finish. It's the finish that's important. Here in Numbers chapter 12, somebody is bucking Moses' authority. By the way, be careful when somebody gossips about spiritual authorities. You can learn from this passage. The reason is given in 1 Timothy 5:19, against an elder, receive not an accusation, but before two or three witnesses. There's a reason for that. Spiritual leaders, I think, can take heart from this passage, especially when a man like Moses is being shot at. Did you see what kind of a man he was there in verse 3? He was very meek above all the men which are upon the face of the earth. Did he deserve to get this complaining against him? Was he deserving of this? No, there were some people who didn't like the fact that he was in the lead. It reveals more the spiritual condition of Aaron and Miriam than it does of Moses. Those two are bucking Moses. And God judges Miriam. She, the one who saved the infant Moses. She, who started out so well. She is the one who now, toward the end, is now bucking the authority of the one that God had chosen. You know, that one deed of sparing Moses' life, that doesn't give her a pass for the rest of her life. All the good that she had done could be wiped out in a moment. You know, you remember that passage in the Bible in Ezekiel that says that if a man who is wicked turns from his way, he will live. We remember that passage, but did you know that there's another part of that passage? Let's go to that, Ezekiel chapter 33. We tend to remember the part that says, if a wicked man turn from his ways, he will live. As you see in verse 19 of Ezekiel 33. But if the wicked turn from his wickedness and do that which is lawful and right, he shall live thereby. And that's what we strive to see, is we want to see sinners come to the Lord, turn from their wicked way so that they might live. But let's not forget the parallel truth for the righteous man who turns to wickedness. Back up to the verse just prior to that, Ezekiel 33:18. When the righteous turneth from his righteousness and committeth iniquity, he shall even die thereby. He could have lived righteously all of his life, but then at the end he may have turned from it. And you say, that's not fair. Then argue against the Lord God, who said, verse 17, backing up a little bit more, yet the children of thy people say the way of the Lord is not equal, it's not fair. But as for them, their way is not equal, God says. Look at verses 12 and 13. Therefore, thou son of man, say unto the children of thy people, the righteousness of the righteous shall not deliver him in the day of his transgression. As far as the wickedness of the wicked, he shall not fall thereby in the day that he turneth from his wickedness. Neither shall the righteous be able to live for his righteousness in the day that he sinneth. When I shall say to the righteous that he shall surely live, if he trust to his own righteousness and commit iniquity, all his righteousnesses shall not be remembered, but for his iniquity that he hath committed, he shall die for it. Go to the parable of the soils in Luke chapter 8. And in that chapter, you're going to find that those who are on the rock, who receive the word with joy, and they spring up, they've got a good start, don't they? But they die. Those amidst the thorns, how do they spring up? Quickly. And you're going, this is promising. Wow. Then the thorns come in, which Jesus likened to persecution, temptations, and soon they're dragged away. It's not how you start, folks. It's how you finish. Those on the good ground, which in an honest and good heart, having heard the word, keep it and bring forth fruit with patience, endurance. We have seen people start well and finish poorly. You could probably think of somebody who started well and finished poorly. I can think of friends of mine in college, men I highly respected, who even after college went into the ministry and for years did well, but just in the last couple of years, tremendous disappointment. They started well and for a lot of their life had what many would consider great ministries. But then they began to compromise. And all of a sudden, their finish is not what their start was. And it discourages people. And that's why I'm saying, you know what? This is a source of discouragement for the Christian. Isn't it kind of discouraging to you when you see somebody who really started well? You thought highly of them. You thought highly of her. And then they do something that is so terribly disappointing. Doesn't that discourage you? It's like, oh, I can't. Another one. It has an effect on us. It influences us. But understand something. This is not anything new. There was a man that Paul really appreciated. In fact, Paul would often name this man in his epistles. He names him in Colossians 4:14. I'll read it to you. He says, Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greets you. Demas is mentioned again in Philemon 24 as someone who salutes him. And then at the end of Paul's life, when he writes 2 Timothy, the last book that Paul wrote, here's what Paul has to say about Demas. Demas hath forsaken me. Why? Having loved this present world. What a source of discouragement for the Apostle Paul. That's found in verse 10 of chapter 4, just a few verses before the very last words that Paul penned. Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. It happened in Paul's day. In fact, in that very same book, Paul talks about everybody in Asia has basically deserted him. He's left standing alone. Many times we get discouraged because of what's happening around us. My admonition tonight is that none of us be that source of discouragement to somebody else. John wrote this in 1 John 2:18, it is the last time. Literally, it is the last hour. And you might say that has been the case for the last 1900 years. It's the last hour. 1 John 2:19 refers to Christ deniers. They went out from us, but they were not all of us. For if they had been of us, they would no doubt have continued with us. But they went out that they might be made manifest that they were not all of us. He said, people have left us. They weren't of us. He's not talking about backsliders. He's talking about apostates like Judas. I'll tell you somebody who finished well. The man who said, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but to all them also that love his appearing. Here's a man who was not a source of discouragement to other believers. Here's a man who fought a good fight. He kept the faith. Folks, that requires endurance. I'm challenging Mark and Imelda tonight with this. Recently saved. That you keep the faith. That you endure the hardships. That you don't become a source of discouragement for others. And I pray that none of us will be a source of discouragement to you. Don't have a big start and a small finish. Whatever your start is, finish well. Finish well. You go to Revelation chapters 2 and 3. And to each of the seven churches, Jesus talks about being overcomers. It's not just how you start, it's how you finish. Big start, small finish? I trust not in the case of anyone here. But then there's another source of discouragement. It's big talk, little walk. Big talk, little walk. We see an example of this in Numbers chapter 32. Numbers chapter 32. I had a one of my brothers, one of my younger brothers, not Mike, the other one who's younger than I, that I'm not going to mention because this may go out over internet, and he may listen to this. He'll figure it out, but I don't want anyone else to know who it is. But I remember him as a teenager saying, one day I'm going to play for the Dallas Cowboys. Well, he was about as good a football player as I was. No way he's going to play for the Dallas Cowboys. Big talk, little walk. That's what I'm talking about. Think about the puny guy who's talking real big until the big guy he bragged against shows up. Then he becomes a little walker. Big talker, little walker. Here in Numbers chapter 32, we read that the children of Israel are getting ready to enter into the promised land. And there's 2.5 tribes who come up with an idea. Look at Numbers 32:1. Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. And when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle. The children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses and to Eleazar the priest and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibon and Jazer and Nimra and Heshbon and Eliala and Shebam and Nebo and Beon, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, is a land for cattle, and thy servants have cattle. Wherefore, said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan. Get the picture here. The children of Israel are still on the west or on the east side of Jordan. They haven't crossed the Jordan into the land of Canaan yet. They're getting ready to do this. But they have conquered property on this side. Og, king of Bashan, Sihon, they've taken care of them. And so some of the children of Israel have settled in on the east side of the Jordan River. Namely, Reuben and Gad, and you'll later see the half-tribe of Manasseh. And so they say, hey, Moses, Eleazar, we're just going to stay on this side. We do not want to go over Jordan and get land on the other side. Now think about that. For 40 years, they're wandering in the wilderness. And something had happened that precipitated this 40-year wandering that put them in this predicament in the first place. Somebody else had discouraged the children of Israel from doing what they were supposed to do. In fact, it's mentioned. Look at verse 6. And Moses said unto the children of Gad and the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? And wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them? Thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up unto the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel that they should not go into the land which the Lord had given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled the same time, and he swore, saying, surely none of the men came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. And the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was consumed. And behold, ye are risen up in your father's stead, an increase of sinful men, to augment yet the fierce anger of the Lord toward Israel. For if ye turn away from him, he will yet again lead them in the wilderness, and ye shall destroy all this people. Do you see how that they're a source of discouragement? And Moses likens them to those 40 years earlier who discouraged others due to their own unbelief. You can read about that in Deuteronomy chapter 1. And verse 28. And Moses says, listen, while others are going to war, you're going to sit here? Verse 6. You know what? You can discourage others, not just by what you say, but by what you say and don't do. Verse 7. You're not going to go. It's not just what you're saying, it's what you won't do. Any one of us can be a source of discouragement to somebody else, folks. How? Being big talkers, little walkers. And we haven't really gotten to that part yet. You're not seeing, what am I talking about? Big talk, little walk. Well, if you read on to verse 16, and they came near unto Moses, unto him, and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our cattle and cities for our little ones, but we ourselves will go ready, armed before the children of Israel until we have brought them into their unto their place, and our little ones shall dwell in the fenced cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return unto our houses until the children of Israel have inherited every man his inheritance. For we will not inherit with them on yonder side Jordan or forward, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side Jordan, eastward. You see what they're saying? They're saying, oh wait, understand please, we're going to help you. We're talking big. We're going to help you. Although we're not going to actually possess that land ourselves, we will risk our lives as well to help you. Verse 20, and Moses said unto them, if ye will do this thing, if ye will go armed before the Lord to war, and will go all of you armed over Jordan before the Lord until ye have driven out his enemies from before them, and the land be subdued before the Lord, then afterward ye shall return and be guiltless before the Lord and before Israel, and this land shall be your possession before the Lord. So Moses is taking them up on what they've said. Okay, now you're talking big. You're talking like, okay, when we all go over, you're going to go with us, you're going to fight for us. If you will indeed do that, then you will be guiltless. Before I go on, let me just give some examples of how any one of us can talk big and walk little. You can talk big about some ideas and what we as a church ought to do and so forth, and that's great. But does the big walk follow the big talk? People get excited when somebody has an idea. Yeah, we'd like to do this, we'd like to do that, and then you do nothing. That's discouraging. People sometimes say, you know what we ought to do? And notice the word, the pronoun I used. You know what we ought to do? What's the pronoun? You know what we ought to do? And what they mean is, you know what you all ought to do? Because when they're given a chance to lead in what they say we ought to do, all of a sudden, nothing. Jesus warned his disciples about people who say, he says, do what they say, but don't do what they do. All therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do, Jesus said, but do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. So what they say for you to do. Who's he talking about there? The Pharisees. It takes just a few to discourage the majority. Here's some math for you. You ready for some math? Here's these 2.5 tribes here. How many is in each one of these tribes? Well, if you go to chapter 26, you're going to find out that Reuben has 43,730. You don't need to necessarily turn there unless you want to. And that same chapter says Gad has 40,500 and Manasseh has 52,700. Well, if you take the tribe of Reuben and the tribe of Gad and then half of Manasseh, you come up with a total of 107,580 men. You'll find out in that same chapter that there are 601,730 armed men. So if you do the math here and you take the 107,580 of Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh, and out of that 601,730, 18% of them say, we would rather not go over. We'll help you, but we would rather not go over. 18%. In other words, 9.5 tribes of the 12 were to go over. 82%. Just 2.5 tribes out of 12 can discourage the rest. It doesn't take but 1 or 2 or 3 people to discourage a lot of other people. And you get to verse 23 of Numbers 32. But if ye will not do so, behold, ye have sinned against the Lord. Listen, you talked big. We're going to wait for your walk. We're going to see what you do. And Moses says, if you will not do so, listen, you have sinned against the Lord. And then comes that little part of that verse that everybody remembers. And you be sure your sin will find you out. Dr. Bob Jones Sr. once preached a sermon on that. He entitled it, "You Can't Do Wrong and Get Away with It." You can't. You know what these 2.5 tribes did? They did what they said they were going to do. They did it. They talked big and they walked big. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen a lot of times. And you can become a discourager of the brethren. Let me ask you something. Are you an encourager or a discourager of the brethren? Not by what you say, but by what you do. Kind of looked a lot at what the Bible says about not just being hearers only, but doers, haven't we? May we not be somebody who discourages other people. Father,